Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Easier for people to be able to resonate with what it is that you're saying, and also be able to feel that they too can do the same thing.
Well, right, and people, you know, I get a lot, you know, when I do lectures, you know, I might go and do an hour to 2 hour lecture in front of an audience. A lot of my audiences have been in the past years, couple of years, have been in Europe, so. You know, I didn't realize how funny I was in Polish, you know. who knew? But apparently even the delayed reaction works, although I do have to work on, you know, some of the American slang that we use. Obviously it doesn't translate very well. I get a lot of people who come up to me and say, you know, I thought I was the only one. Or I thought it's nice to know that, you know, that there's someone else that can relate to what I'm going through. Because I've had the same kind of, I mean, there are a lot of different things that people go through. And I've had the same kinds of unpleasantness than most people. I mean, yes, of course, we get yelled at, and maybe we've had some verbal abuse. I've also had some physical abuse, some sexual abuse, and different things throughout my life. So I can certainly relate to people that are going through things because I've been there.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not afraid to talk about it, you know. I mean, I'm not going to be, I grew up in an environment where, you know, you basically, especially a little Italian-American, household, where everything was swept under the carpet. You know, you don't talk about these things. You know, it's private, it's family. But, you know, sometimes people just need to know they're not alone in what they're experiencing. You know, and there is light at the end of the tunnel. Because if I can get through this, so can you. I mean, I'm not special. I'm just like everybody else.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've got that Italian American background too. So, boy, do I understand. You know how things just aren't said. You know, I mean, not even necessarily swept under the rug. They're just not even there to be swept. You know. So it's you know, it can be a real challenge when you're trying to deal with some of those issues and trying to. The resolve and just talk about it, you know, that in itself can be really difficult.
Well, absolutely, and I, you know, once you find those snippets throughout the day that the things that you can kind of smile about, you know, I mean, as I said, that's when I really started to realize, oh, wait a minute, there's another way to do this, you know.
Yeah.
But again, it's nice to know you're not alone, and. I mean, you can stay in that mode of negativity, or you can move forward. So, I mean, the choice is always yours.
Yeah, very, very true, very true. Now, one of the things, you know, part of the book, you talk about raising the vibration, and we mentioned a little bit about, you know, the lower vibrational energy. So for the listeners out there who maybe really just don't have a sense of vibration, you know, the fact that there is higher, lower, there is this vibration. Would you mind kind of talking a little bit about that?
Sure. So I call it vibration, and I use that term. I kind of came across that term through experience. Let me just liken it to a tuning fork. Okay. I'm sure you listeners know what a tuning fork is. You know, like they use that when they're working on tuning a piano. You know, each key has a different frequency, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It has
mm-hmm.
a different note. It sounds different, you know? And when they go and use the tuning forks, they're also associated to a different frequency or vibe. And these are, the frequency is a vibration. So when you hit a tuning fork, not only do you hear something, but maybe the doctor will put it on your knee, or you might actually feel it in different places in your body. And each different tuning fork has a different vibration. And so emotions also have vibrations. And working with some people that I really respect, and there's a gentleman who has a who's written several books, who's now passed, but he talks about a scale, like the scale of a piano, and how different emotions will be hitting on the have a certain numerical vibration on the scale. Now, I am not one for number envy. You know, we live in a society that has Porsche envy and whatever envy and different things. And so number envy, you know, you're either vibrating, your emotions are you have certain emotions that are going to be resonating in your state of being, that you're going to be in this being love state, or you're going to be vibrating something else. So to give you an idea of what the something else is, I've written down just a few of the emotions in the book that might have you vibrating that something else. So, for example, I'm sure you've heard of, well, obviously fear, and you've got worry, you've got envy, you've got judgment, you've got gossip, frustration, terror, paranoia, arrogance, pride, anxiety, when you're resentful, self-righteous, hopelessness, despair, shame, guilt. I mean, these are all lower vibrations. Even ones like one-upness. You know how somebody, you tell them something, they have to one-up you? That's because that's part of that low self-esteem that someone might have. So, you know, people that are so into their ego and controlling, these are all what I would consider lower-based vibrations or negative emotions.
Yeah. So now that was the vibration you would call something else?
That's the vibration I would call something else.
Okay.
Because the being love vibration really is really simple. I mean, it's just four base emotions. And if you can stay in these four base emotions and truly like live in those emotions, even if it's only at the beginning, even if it's only an hour total a day, you're probably better off than 99% of the population.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And what are the four base emotions?
So the four emotions that that make up what I call the being love state. So you've got that, I'm going to bliss and joy, you know, bliss, joy, happiness, excitement. Well, that to me is like the first two, even though it sounds like four, but it's really two. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's two more. There's, I call it unconditional love for every situation, regardless of what you perceive the outcome to be.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, let's say, here's a perfect example. So here I am, I'm on a plane. I'm getting back from, I was volunteering in Brazil, and I had to go, I got a free ticket, you know, through the miles, you know, people, you know, airline miles. And I'm going to go, unfortunately, I have to go from Brazil to Canada to Arizona, where I was living at the time, to use this free ticket, but I'm not complaining. Okay, fine, it's going to cost me $60 for the tax, whatever it is for this ticket, so I'm not going to complain. It's normally like an $800 one-way ticket. So I get on the plane, and I get to my seat, and it's kind of full, this plane, and so far, you know, I mean, I've kind of already boarded at this point, obviously, and there's a guy sitting in my seat.
Mm.
And I look at my boarding pass, and I look where he's sitting, and I'm going, gee, I hope he speaks English. But I was in Brazil. He could have been speaking Portuguese, and I would have been in trouble. And I said, I'm sorry, sir, I think you're in my seat. And he looks at me and he goes, I don't think so. And he spoke English just fine, which is great for me. And he looks at mine, and we have the same seat number. And I thought, what are the odds of this? This is the computer age. I mean, come on, this is Air Canada. So I said, okay, well, I'm sorry. And I made my way. I tried to get through the crowd. I made my way to the first flight attendant I could find, and I wave her down, and I say, excuse me, I think we have a mix-up here. And I told her. And she went back to the gentleman. She got his boarding pass. She took mine. She went to the front of the plane. She asked me to stay where I was at, over in, like, off the galleys, middle galley, because it was a big, fairly big plane, you know, because it was a long flight. So she comes back, and she says, ma'am, can you come with me? And I thought, okay. So she brings me to the front of the plane to the head flight attendant, who explains to me that the flight is really full, and there may be a mix-up, but they're gonna escort me back to the gate. So I laughed, and I said, okay, and I touched her hand, and she says, I'm really sorry. This is that it's a very full flight. We just don't know if we have a seat for you. And I touched her hand, and I said, it's okay. It happens. I was never going to lower my vibration, even though it looked like I wasn't getting on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
I thought to myself, and this is what I always say when this happens. I say, okay, I'm sure something incredible is going to happen. Amazing. More amazing than I can imagine. You know, I have a couple little pat sayings that I use. So they walked me out to the gate. They hand my boarding pass to the gate attendant, and she disappears. The flight attendant disappears. And I'm like, okay. I could think about this and start worrying about it. That would lower my vibration to not unconditional love, bliss, and all these beautiful things. So I decided instead to think about the cheeseburger that I was going to have mm-hmm. when I got off the plane, because I was in Brazil. I mean, it's not like an American cheeseburger at a diner, you know. So that's all I concentrated on. Saying, oh, and I was thinking about all the different savory tastes of the burger and the ketchup and the mayo and the pickles and all the big steak fries. You know, this is what I focused on. And that made me happy. Instead of, I could have spent the next 20 minutes focusing on, you know, oh my God, they're not going to let me on the plane, and getting angry or pissed or frustrated. I wasn't going to do it. So here I am thinking about the cheeseburger, and I didn't even almost hear them when they called me. So there's no one else at the gate, and they call me, and they hand me a boarding pass. It's like, oh, great, I'm on the plane. So I get on, and I'm going, I'm not going to look at the ticket. If I'm in the middle of the seat, I don't care. I'm on the plane. Well, I get to the thing, and I look down, and it says 1A.
Wow.
So I got pushed up to first class. Not mm-hmm. only, oh, it gets better. Not only was it first class, it was a pod. It's like a roomette. Where the you know, you've got all these beautiful, obviously the food is fabulous up there, but it goes into a bed and you have your own little roomette. There's only a few of these. It's a $5,000 one-way ticket.
Wow.
And I thought, of course, now I'm all gushy, grateful, and uh-huh. thank you so much. And so they're asking me, well, what do you do? And I explained I was just coming back from volunteering, and I explained a little bit about the books I had written up to that point and how I believe in love, and, you know, my license plate always has something with love in it, and, you know, that kind of thing. And I didn't think it could get better, but it did. So after, in the morning, because it was an overnight flight, in the morning, they after they finished the breakfast and whatever they were serving in the front first class, they called me to the front of the plane, the flight attendants. And I'm thinking, well, they're not going to throw me out the side door, so what's going on? So I'm up there, and I'm like, wow. They said, well, you know, we would like to do something nice for you. I said, oh, honey. I said, you gave me the seat. I said, you've done enough. And she goes, no. We have to get rid of all the champagne. We would like to treat you to a champagne sugar scrub at 35,000 feet. And this is first class. This is like $80 bottle of champagne, but they have to dump it all because, you know, they can't wow. land with it or something. So I'm like, oh, okay. And I'm like flabbergasted. So they rinse my hands with champagne. They have the sugar. They, you know, now my hands have the sugar on it, and then they rinse them again. Oh. It's like soft and smooth. And I'm thinking, and I just looked at her, and I said, well, why me? She goes, you're the nicest person we've ever had in first class.
Wow.
So I thought that was so funny. But, you know, when you're in that state and you stay in that state, not only do you feel great, but amazing outcomes come to these daily little situations. If I would have gotten angry, mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't have got on that plane.
Yeah.
I probably would have just said, go home, lady. But because I stayed in that higher vibration, it was as if everything clicked. Something, mm-hmm. some magic door opened, or I don't know what you want to call it, but, and it's not just about being nice. I mean, I'm nice to everyone. It's about a feeling.
Right.
It's more than positive thinking. It's a feeling. You know, people talk about the laws of this and that, and how you, if you think it, it will materialize. Well, I think it's deeper than that, because I believe that the state of being love, I mean, this, any state of being, I think your beliefs, first of all, are the guiding key, are the key. What you believe, you do create. And I believe that your beliefs are at the top of the triangle. That really kind of affects your emotions, how you feel about you and your world, and that affects how you act in the world and the choices we make, and ultimately that affects your state of being. And that's why I'd rather be vibrating in a state of being loved than vibrate somewhere else. It just feels better. You know, everything is more delicious.
Yeah, that is, you know, and I think the ability to be in that state when things go awry is probably one of the biggest challenges for a lot of people, you know, to be able to, and obviously this is something that you live and that you've done. So would you say that it's the kind of thing that you just have to practice at to be able to do it more naturally?
Well, it's yes and no. I mean, yes, ultimately, yes. The more, it's sort of like riding a bike. The more you ride, the better you get. And then, of course, it's, you know, even though I haven't ridden a bike in, you know, 10 years, you know, once I get back on the bike, I remember. So even if you forget, oh, my gosh, somebody said something to me, well, if you stop something in the middle when you go back to it, are you going backwards? No. It doesn't work like that. There's a lot. In my book, I kind of talk about many different. Each chapter is a different. I'm going to say step as I talk about fear and how we live. Some of us live in lack, or the guilt and obligation, which are huge. Guilt and obligation are huge barriers, I believe, to getting to the state of love. You know, and as we work on our self-esteem and self-worth, it's not something that's difficult to get to, but there are things that you need to do. I'm going to call it, let's call it self-analyzation. You really need to take a hard look at yourself and say, okay, where am I at right now, and where do I want to get to? And if you can, as I said, if you can get to the state of being love, even if it's just a few minutes a day, you're better off than so much more of the population today, because they just live in that misery. I'm going to call it's either misery, the misery that they wear like a blanket.
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunate, but that's where, you know, a lot of people live. And I think, you know, like a lot of people are just so unhappy today.
Yeah.
You know,
I was going to ask you that because, you know, it does seem. I mean, because, you know, you talked about, you know, living in that state. I mean, I know a number of people who are constantly in that state. And to me, it's draining. Every time that I have an interaction, you know, with someone who is in that state, it's kind of like, oh, my gosh, you know, it's like, you know, you're my friend, but you really don't want to talk about that, you know?
Okay. So I actually... You know, and this is actually, thank you for bringing that up, because there was that fourth emotion that I want to bring up. So this is perfect. You actually, thank you very much. You gave me a perfect example. So here we are in that unconditional love, that last example, that last emotion. I call it compassion, because when someone is coming at you, okay, they're either going to come at you out of joy, or out of something else, right? Out of being love or something else. And if they're coming out of you at something else, in your case, the something else is misery. And maybe they're in that victim mentality. Oh, poor is me. I, this is what's going on in my life. And they want to make themselves feel better by talking about it with you.
Right.
That sound right? Okay.
Yes.
So what happens is, and that happens a lot with people, when they're not ready to go through and do some self-analyzation and actually, you know, I mean, and move forward out of it, maybe they just want to stay in that misery because it's comfortable to them. They might try to, I call it unloading. I call them, you've got the, what do I call it? The negative Nancy, the poor me, you know, yeah, exactly. And so those are the people that, you have to, when you look at your caller ID, when they call, you have to determine whether or not you want to pick up the phone. You know, oh, my God, you know you're going to be on the phone with them for about an hour or 2 hours, and afterwards you might feel drained. Well, if you're in the state of being love, you don't get drained because of the compassion. So I use, when I talk to audiences, I use this cute example that I came up with because I, in my own practical, in my own life, because I was, there was somebody that was in my life that I cared about very deeply, but boy, were they a Debbie Downer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Everything was negative, 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 negative. And I had to come up with, I was, as I said, I really liked this person. I love this person in my life, but she just didn't get it. And she wasn't in the same place I was. So I came up with the example of a five-year-old.
Hmm.
Okay, so I remembered back when I was 5 or 7 years old, a friend of mine had a child I was babysitting so that her and her husband go out for date night. You know, I mean, why not? I mean, because I can, right? And I love kids. I think kids are great. So this young guy that I was babysitting for, he was either 5 or 7 or something, but he was doing his math homework, you know, and he was frustrated. And he kind of was, I mean, he wasn't like having a temper tantrum, but you could tell he wasn't having a good time with it. It was an unpleasant experience for this little guy. Now, my first undergrad was in applied mathematics, so I could have done his math homework for him, obviously. But, you know, as they say, and as I relate this to adults, you never do someone's homework for them. They have to do their own homework.
Yeah.
Okay? So that was number one. Number two, I could have felt superior to him. Hey, I know advanced math, and you can't. You're adding 1 + 1. Of course not. Why would I feel superior to a 5-year? I mean, that's ridiculous.
Mm, okay.
So when you're dealing with somebody who doesn't get it, remember, they're doing their math homework. You might have already passed that homework, but you're not better than anybody else because nobody's better than anybody else.
Right.
You know? So that whole arrogance, that just will bring you to arrogance, which is something else, state of being. Okay, so that's number two. So you're not going to do their homework for them. You let them do their own homework. You're not going to feel superior to them. You're not going to try to explain advanced mathematics to them because they're just not going to get it. They're not there yet. So why are you? So when I'm talking to someone and they just aren't there yet, I am not going to try to. But you don't understand. You need to vibrate love and you forget it.
Uh-huh. Right.
It's not going to happen. Don't waste your breath. So that's what you can do is go, oh, I remember when I was here at 5 doing my math homework. I remember this. It was frustrating to me. So then you can honestly have compassion for somebody, and because you can have compassion for them and don't get annoyed by that, okay. All of a sudden, you don't get the drainage. You don't feel drained and brought down because they haven't sucked anything from you. They haven't sucked that energy, that vibration. You're still vibrating high. Now, so chances are one of two things are going to happen. They're either going to stop talking to you about this because you're not giving your energy away to them, by the way. You're not lowering your vibration so they feel better. Okay?
Right.
Or, depending on how high and how long you've been vibrating at a certain level, you're actually going to help raise theirs. You're actually going to help raise their vibration. There was this gentleman, and I write about it in the book, but I'm a little hesitant to say his name on the radio because of legal matters, of course.
Right.
But he had said that as your vibration increases, the emotions you live in, you know, like love versus hate, they actually will have an effect on others that are in your space. And, I mean, do you ever walk into a crowd and there's an angry mob and, you know, anger incites anger?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, same thing with love, you know. There's a beautiful woman, her name is Amma, by the way, and she comes to the United States every once in a while and she gives hugs.
Right.
To people, the free hugs, mm-hmm. right. And I had never seen her, and she just happened to be in a place appearing close to where she was, and I went to go see her, and she was in the United States, and she says a few words to people. She usually says son, 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 or daughter, daughter, daughter. When I came up to her, she hugged me, and she says, Mama, Mama, thank you. And I went, huh? So that was interesting, and I usually you stay about 5 minutes on stage with her, and somehow they left me up there about a little over an hour. And I thought to myself, how cool is this? Wow. I mean, the synchronicity. I was there. She happened to be there. I got into the front row. I gave her a hug, and everybody's blown away by her energy. For me, it just felt like I was home. I was comfortable. So I think we were kind of vibrating. I'm not going to compare myself to Amma, but I was vibrating in a, at least within a stone, you know, within a close
yeah.
enough rung on the ladder, as you want to call it, to her, to actually just feel something familiar and comfortable to me. And the fact that she says, Mama, Mama, I says, it was kind of really cool. So she was really kind of, and then she was winking at me on stage, and I'm going, okay, this is a little bit unnerving for me. Because, I mean, I'm not usually, you know, I'm just, even though I'm out in the public eye, sometimes I can be a little bit, I'm kind of shy in a way. People don't realize that about me when they hear me talk because I don't shut up, but yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, also too, when you're talking about something that you're passionate about, it's just much easier, you know, to just, you know, talk, you know, and you know, that versus, you know, interacting spontaneously, you know, in a different role, I guess, you know, that I mean, those are two different kinds of situations that, you know, I mean, I talk on the radio all the time, you know, done it for 5 years. Get me in a crowd, though, of people I don't know, and it takes me a little while before I start talking.
Now I hear you. Mm-hmm. I hear you. Well, and you know, and I know you had also brought up the whole bit about how people live today and how unhappy people are.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Earlier, you know, my experience has been I see people and they kind of like to wrap that misery that, you know, whether and people or the people that live in pain. You know, I believe that our physical environment, whether it be our body or the situations. Are sometimes directly related to our state of being, our emotional state of being, you know. And some people I've seen there's a friend of a friend, and I've done some work with him and talked to him, and he's in some physical pain and he's miserable, but he really just doesn't want to move forward because he's so comfortable in that. That's the only thing he knows, you know. And it's hard, you know. It's a choice. I mean. Being in a state of love is a choice. It's not going to come and bite you in the behind and say, hey, here I am. By the way, it's time.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's a choice that you have to make. And is that what you want? I mean, because it is all about choice, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, very much so. You know, and you know, I mean, that's the one thing that, you know, I mean, you know, one of the chapters that you have in your book is kind of stepping out of your comfort zone. And,
right.
Yeah, and to me, you know, that is, you know, the idea of being able to, you know, make that blissful kind of vibration or to get to that blissful kind of vibration when things aren't working right or there's something that just, you know, that kind of pushes my button or something that just like, oh, my God, you know, to step back and be able to, make a conscious choice versus a reactive choice is something that it does take work.
Well, it, you know, and again, being a hot-headed Italian originally from New York, I certainly know what it's like to react because, I mean, that was the environment I grew up in. You know, it was, you know, whatever it was an immediate reaction to everything. But, you know, if you can just take that, even if it's a split second, and go, oh, wait a minute. I have control over one thing in my life, how I react. That's it. So
yeah.
Instead of opening my mouth and being the cocky New Yorker, I'm going to take a moment and say, well, where's this coming from? Because when somebody's coming at you, that's where the compassion comes in. When somebody's coming at you, it's never about you, ever. It's always about where they're at and their feeling. It really, you know, if somebody's saying, you know, you cut me off, you know, and I've had this happen on the, you know, I didn't see them. And I accidentally cut somebody off. I would never do that on purpose. You know, I would never, out of anger. That just isn't my style. And I did this one day by accident. And the guy, he's screaming at me because the windows were open. I said, I'm so, so sorry, you know. I wasn't going to pull over because, you know, I wasn't sure what was going to happen. But, and then he flips me the you know, he flips me one of his fingers. And I said, I'm still really sorry. I really apologize. I just didn't see you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he just goes, and he just drove off in a huff, you know. But I could have reacted back at him and said, and yelled at him back. And, of course, I wouldn't do that. That's just not my style. But, you know, when somebody's behind me and they're tailgating me, I just pull over, let them pass. It's okay.
Really?
I'm not going to get frazzled over that.
What's the rush? Well, that's very much for me, too. Now, it's interesting. I had one of these kinds of situations happen to me a couple of days ago. I was walking. I walk every morning. And there was an older gentleman who was kind of coming out of this cul-de-sac and came very close to hitting me, very, very close to hitting me. And it was like, you know, I mean, slammed on his brakes, and I just, you know, just kind of shook my head and walked. And then, you know, then he pulled up, rolled on his window, and he did like what you did, apologized, and he said he was real sorry. And I just looked at him and said, that's fine. I said, but, you know, you better pay attention, because next time, you know, you might actually, you know, hit someone, so you better pay attention to your driving, you know. And you know, rather than kind of get it all, you know. But to me, it just seemed like it was one of those cases where maybe that, you know, that happened for him to be extra careful, you know, something that maybe he really wasn't at this particular time.
Oh, right. Oh, I don't, and if you've read it, but I know, I think in one of the stories I talk about at the time I was pulled over by the cop. I don't know
uh-huh.
if you've read that.
Oh, yeah, go
but
ahead.
But same thing. So here I am on a freeway in Phoenix, and as well as living in Arizona. And I'm driving with the guy, the flow of traffic in the left lane, behind this SUV, and it's got this vanity plate, some sports team. And but the policeman pulls me over, and I'm thinking, he's going with the flow of traffic. What is he doing? So he pulls me over, and he goes, did you not see me? I said, no, sir. You know, and he goes, well, do you have any idea how fast you were going? I said, no, I thought I was going with the flow of traffic. And, you know, I mean, he'd taken my license and registration. I'm going, oh. He goes, you know, you were going 30 over the speed limit. That's a felony. I could take, you know, I don't know if he said he could take me in, he could arrest me or whatever it was. And I thought, wow, okay. And I'm going, and my internal voice is going, I'm sure something more wonderful will happen. I'm sure something more wonderful will happen. But I was a little concerned, you know.
Right.
I didn't want to get hauled off to jail just because I was following this guy with this funny license plate. And he gets a call right then. And he gets called away. And he goes, and he points his finger at me in my face. So like, he hands mm-hmm. me back my license and registration. He goes, this is your lucky day. Now you slow down.
Oh.
And he left.
Yeah.
And
yep.
I thought, it took me a minute. You know, he took off. He went down the road. It took me a minute to compose myself. And I'm like, okay, well, thank you. I didn't get a ticket. You know, and that's all I thought of it. And I drove down. And about a mile down the road, stopped dead on traffic. And I thought, oh, okay. I guess I'm not getting where I want to get to. But it's okay. I didn't get a ticket. I'm
mm-hmm.
happy. And as we got closer, it was that guy in front of me in a bad accident.
Oh, my gosh. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, again, you just like you had to talk to the gentleman, the old gentleman, who tell him, hey, I'm here to I'm your early warning signal. And so that police
right.
officer was mine.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, you know, we've been talking about being the state of being love. Do you have any kind of tips for people out there to maybe help assist getting to that level or experiencing that?
Well, again, I believe that your beliefs guide your perception, you know, of the world and yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then of course how your emotions react and how you act. You know, because I do believe your beliefs affect everything in your life, you know, how you interpret what you see, what you hear, what you feel. And the emotions are really kind of where we hold our beliefs about everything.
Right.
You know, and collectively they do determine what your state of being is. So what I did and what I suggest people do is to take a full accounting, look at yourself honestly. You know, mm-hmm. identify what in your life isn't vibrating in that love state. You know, we are the sum total of all of our experiences. And what happens to us as children, although as adults, I said, we look back at them and kind of laugh, you know, you know, I, you know, this happened to me. I mean, it didn't affect us as adults, has, a, as I said, a profound impact as us on us as children. I make the joke, I can't remember what I had for breakfast, but I can remember this that happened to me when I was three, or this that happened to me when I was four. I mean, why is that? And they're always unpleasant experiences. And so, you know, in speaking to so many other people, everyone's the same, you know. So start writing those little things down. You know, I started writing the instances down. And, I mean, there were hundreds of little things that wouldn't bother me as an adult. But when I was a kid, it was a big deal. And because they're still here in my memory and they still kind of spark a little gotcha in me. They don't tickle my heart, but they kind of hurt. You know, just, you know, a little emotion comes up. And so I started doing that back in the 80s, and I realized, these are the little things I need to work on, you know. And there are tons of ways that we can actually help release these. There's a bunch of different modalities, and I talk about a few of them in the book. So once you start, you know, releasing them, you make more room for the love that we really are. Because I always say 90% worry or anger means there's only room for 10% love.
Right.
So as part of getting to the state of being love, you must take note of these instances at some point. Take notes, you know. And the more you are able to release them and get rid of them from you, from the whatever this beautiful container is, delicious container we live in, as were our bodies, the more room you have to increase or raise your vibration. Basically, it's this: lighten up, baby. You know, when you literally, if you lighten, when they really lightening up, because I think it's because when you get into that state, you're floating. You know, people have asked me to describe what it feels like to be in a state of being love, and when I describe it, they just look at me like, really? I want some of that. Where's that Kool-Aid, you know?
I think there are a lot of people have lost touch with that, you know?
I think that we're born with only unconditional love and beauty, and we lose that through conditioning, absolutely. You know, again, it's not that, you know, when we got, you know, we got lost in the mall. It's not that we were abandoned. You know, I mean, now if I got lost in the mall, I'd be going, oh, good, I can go shopping by myself. See you guys. I'm going to have a nice latte. I'm going to go to Barnes & Noble, read a book, whatever it is. But as a kid, it's very traumatic, you know. And I remember getting lost, and I was like, oh, you know. And that's so you might end up with, you know, not always, but you might end up in this place where you just feel like you're all alone and we're separated. Well, we're not separated. You know, we're never separated. We're all part of that one all that is, whatever you define it as. But to get to a state of being love, oh, my gosh, it's kind of like floating through life on a cloud within a song, you know. It's an elation, and I'm going to use the word, I don't know if I can say this on the radio, S-E-X. It's better than that. It's better than chocolate.
Right.
You know,
okay.
It's one that awakens your senses to the movement of every cell. Like, everything is more vibrant. The colors are more vibrant. Smelling flowers or bakery items takes on new layers of deliciousness. Music becomes even more heavenly, experience, and tastes. Oh, my gosh. The taste that they bathe your palate with pleasure, and everything you touch becomes this incredible tactile experience. It's this rush that of everything, like the sun. I mean, when I see the sunrise, it just such joy wells in me that I just get this tingle.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Well, you know, that's great. It seems like it's just like a heightened sense of awareness.
It really is.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a delicious feeling. I mean, it's the best of everything.
Yeah.
You know, and imagine living even you know, 3 hours of your day like that, or
wow.
6 hours, you know, or whatever it is. And if
one
you can
hour.
Be there,
yeah,
1 hour. If you can get there most of the day, boy, you're just better off than so many people. And again, just the part that keeps me going with this, I mean, the fact that it's, you know, I mean, I'm having this incredible experience, but when people are in my space, they're going, I feel really good. And then that just does it for me, because not only am I doing it for myself, but by just doing what I'm doing, I'm helping other people do it. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, great. By the way, I just want to let listeners know, I apologize for not being able to bring in callers during today's show. The studio decided to be technically challenging today, so we weren't able to bring folks in. So, but definitely, if you have any questions, contact Lisa after the show. I do have her website in the show page description, so just send her any questions that you may have had from today's show. Again, I apologize for that. We try to keep this interactive when we can, but I'm kind of a slave to technology when it comes to the show.
Well, and you know, I believe that. See, the fact that we can't have callers, and not that I don't love to speak to people. Obviously,
mm-hmm.
I do. But it is what it's supposed to be, and it's all good, you know. And I love answering questions, and of course, the book. That's on Amazon. We'll help you get there as well. But they can go to my website. There's a contact me page, and let's see if we can help other people vibrate love. You know.
There you go. Absolutely. Now, before we close, there's a couple more questions I want to ask. First of all, you made the transition from working in a corporate, environment as a vice president, in mergers and acquisitions. But now you are an author and speaker. And so, that's a major transition. And I think there are a lot of people out there right now that are, at least in the corporate sector, who are just not happy there. So would you mind kind of telling, how did you make this change? To me, it seems like it could have been for a lot of people, a frightening type of shift.
Ah, yeah. Well, I'm the girl that jumps out of airplanes, so
okay.
I don't know. And it's kind of interesting. I think I was working a little differently than a lot of people. I was doing, I did do mergers and acquisitions technology. Most of it was in consultancy. There was a time where I was the vice president of technology for one of the largest institutions in the world. But I was good at it. I just wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm.
And because when I was doing the consultancy, I was able to work 6 months and then do 6 months of my own thing. It was a little bit easier for me to have that mentality, first of all, to believe I could do something different. And I wasn't, I really wasn't attached. It's a whole living in lack. I wasn't attached to the money. I mean, yes, granted, my salary as a corporate VP was quite nice. What I started to do is I started to write while I was still consulting.
Okay.
So I was writing as I was consulting. I was doing blogs, and I was still, as I was doing my consultancy and I was doing some of the things out in the world, I was gaining contacts, and I would be invited. Hey, we'd love to hear you speak at, in this place or that place. And so during my vacations or my times off, I would do that. My advice is if you wake up and the first thing you feel as if you need to do is write, and you're writing when you're doing whatever it is actually. But if you're a writer and you're following your passion by writing, again, what you write about has to be something obviously that you're very passionate about,
mm-hmm.
because it shows, you
yeah.
know. And when we write and we work with our true essence, the love that we are does shine in our work. You know, a lot of my books are a little bit eclectic because there is a spiritual undertow to everything I write. But I write for different audiences for different things. Like I might write a romance novel that was my first book. I was experimenting. And I wrote a romance novel, but it's a spiritual romance, so there's a lot of spiritual concepts in there. You know? So there's always going to be that was for the people who, the housewives who like Fifty Shades of Grey, but instead of being separate in separate rooms and doing what they did, this is more like the combining of relationship and transcending the physical and the fact that a man and woman can have a relationship that transcends the physical. So yeah, why not? But follow your passion. I mean, you may want to be the next Hemingway, Tolstoy, or Salinger, but I suggest that you manage your own expectation about your success. You know, did I write my first book and go, hey, and I'm going to be a success overnight? It doesn't really work like that. It hasn't in my experience. Maybe for you it would be different. But I think, as I, you know, after you have a few books out there and through lots of marketing and years under your belt, before you really quit your day job, you know, and
right. Ease your way into
it. Knowing that, you know, I think makes it a little easier. And it's okay to publish while you're still working. You know, you can, you know, it would be nice to have for a lot of people, you know, what their hobbies or their passion is something that's outside of what they make their daily living in. But there is a way that they can eventually transition. Just take the step and don't be so hard on yourself and just manage the expectation and think, okay, well, someday is today. I'm going to start doing it now and I'm going to publish and I'll have patience that when the timing is right and that I'll be able to just transition full time. And it happens.
Yeah.
You know, it does. And it's a wonderful thing to be able to get paid for what you love.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Well, gosh, we're down to the last few minutes here, so is there maybe any final message or any kind of thing that you would want to leave the listeners with before we close?
Well, I'm reminded of this really quick story. There was this guy that I was talking to, this gentleman about the state, and he says, you know, and he goes, well, staying in that state, that's not going to be really easy to keep that up. And I laughed at him. I said, really, why? And he goes, well, it's too much work. Mm-hmm. You know, and he had been complaining about what has been going on in his life and his day and et cetera. And he was kind of an angry kind of guy. And I said, so let me get this straight. I said, waking up feeling awful, dragging yourself out of bed, mm-hmm. hating your job, your life, and thinking about who said what to you that made you feel bad yesterday, grimacing, complaining, and going about your day, ready to rip someone's head off, is easier than waking up feeling good, thinking about nothing but that moment and smiling, singing, going about your day, feeling great as you greet everyone you meet. So, I'm sorry, what feels like more work? You know, I didn't get it. So he laughed, and he said for the first time in months that I presented him a different perspective, and he was very happy to hear it. So I think it's all about, again, making that choice.
Right.
Once you take off the blanket and say, okay, I'm sick of this being unhappy or being miserable or being in pain, or it's time to make it to try change, you know, and once you choose to move away from misery, you know, you can start to take the steps to release all those lower vibrations and make more room for the love.
Absolutely. Well, Lisa, this has really been great. Thank you for your time today. I really enjoyed our conversation, and I'm sure our listeners did as well, and will make some better choices or make some different choices to raise their vibration. So I really want to thank you for your time today.
Have a beautiful rest of your afternoon, darling.
Thank you. You as well. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Lisa Donatella. We've been talking about her newest book, The State of Being Love, Steps to Raise Your Vibration for a Joy-Filled Life. Again, you can find out more about that book and all the other books and items that Lisa has to offer by visiting her website, which is www.lisadonatella.com. LEZADONATELLA.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Bite Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.